Well, Mr. Chairman, I stated to your chairman a while this morning, brethren, that perhaps this afternoon we take up something of a little practical nature.
They'd like to record this, Dr. Bowman, for that meeting tomorrow.
See, I'm supposed to speak at McCook tomorrow. And I think I ought to owe you all an answer why I'm not going to McCook. Last Friday evening at 6:30, Dr. Henry Gruber, a former vice president of Synod and a chairman of our board for higher education for many years, had his second severe heart attack. And at 8:30, God called him home. Dr. Gruber is to be buried tomorrow. Oh, about a year or so ago, he came to me in a very confidential mood and said, Benton, if things can be so arranged, I hope that when my family asks you, you will be able to preach my funeral sermon. And since he worked with me for many years, since he was always such a faithful and conscientious man, I have asked the West Nebraska brethren to excuse me and to take up this matter. I suggested that they take it up out of the Concordia Theological Monthly. And now they've arranged that I record here. They'll also hear this. Now something with reference to the matter of our coming convention. Well, what about Synod? I take it that every one of you has arranged to have those congregations that must elect the delegate, the lay delegate, have done so. And I take it that you have written to your district secretary or your district president and have sent him a good characterization of the man who is coming. The time is not very far distant when I'll be called upon with some of the vice presidents to appoint men who serve on the floor committees of our convention in San Francisco. I don't know all our pastors. Less do I know some of their qualifications. And I certainly don't know all the laymen. And certainly cannot be expected to know their qualifications to serve on a committee. We sometimes get statements from congregations or pastors stating merely, he would be a good committee man. And then I ask myself, would he be a good committee man on matters of constitution? Would he be a good committee man to serve on a doctrinal committee? Or would he be a good committee man to serve on a committee on excuses? Well, now how should I know? I'm not belittling the committee on excuses. It takes a committee with some backbone to serve there. Otherwise, a lot of excuses would be readily passed. So we ought to know at least, is that man interested in doctrine? Is that man interested in young people's work? Is that man interested in our colleges and seminaries? Is that man particularly interested in missions? Has he good, common, Christian, dedicated sense along those lines? In making these appointments for our convention, we try to be fair to all districts. According to a communicant base, on the communicant basis, we try to give each district its proportionate share of candidates. There are some districts which will perhaps have only two or three men of their delegates to serve. And I mean pastors, teachers, and laymen. There are other districts which will have more. That depends entirely on the size of the district. It isn't always simple, particularly not when you then go through the list of characterizations. You do want to appoint committees where every member of the committee qualifies well. And for that reason, I'm saying, if you haven't already done so, please do so at an early date. The convention will be held in San Francisco, June the 17th to the 27th. An announcement appears in the present issues of the Lutheran Witness and also their Lutherana. Committee number one, which deals with colleges and seminaries, and if committee number three has very much to do on matters of doctrine, and in that would come the synodical conference matters, that would come the reports made by our intersynodical committees, that would come also the question of invitation to join the Lutheran World Federation, or the memorials by the one or the other conference, or even an altar guild, that we do join the Lutheran World Federation, then others who say no to that, this committee on doctrinal matters will have to decide and present some of the resolutions to the convention for final decision. There are those who predict there are going to be 10,000 of our people at San Francisco. Well, those who've never seen the other side of the mountain perhaps may be eager to combine that with a visit. If there are any of you pastors who are delegates and hope to make that a vacation period after the convention, may I say that if you want to give yourself a real treat, if you've never seen it, then drive north of San Francisco into Oregon and into Washington and into British Columbia and see what God has placed there in the form of beauty for our eyes to behold. My personal opinion is that there is no more beautiful spot in the United States than Glacier National Park and the Northwest, the Mount Hood and the Mount Rainier section, the Columbia River Drive and all of that, things we certainly may enjoy. And something even more beautiful than our Rockies, the Canadian Rockies. So if you get a vacation, drive up there leisurely and enjoy the beauties that God has placed before us. Dr. Pottenhauer once said to me, "Hast du schon mal Banff und Lake Louise gesehen?" That's what in the foot of the Canadian Rockies. And I said, "Nein." "Ach, das musst du sehen. Das übertrifft die Alpen." In other words, it excels the Alps in Switzerland. Now, I've seen the Canadian Rockies twice. I've driven through them from the northern section, not the extreme northern section, but west of Edmonton, down to Lake Louise. And one vista of beauty after another. And I've seen the Switzerland Alps twice. I've stood where I could look from a high plateau into the very heart of the Alps. I saw the Mönch, the Jungfrau, and other peaks there. And I've seen the Switzerland Alps from the skies, those concentrated peaks. I agree with Dr. Pottenhauer. The Canadian Rockies übertreffen die Alpen. So those of you who want to take a vacation after the convention, do that. Now, as to the convention itself, if we use the entire auditorium, we might seat 10,000 people. We, of course, have about 1,000 delegates. And that includes the men who come from our various boards and commissions. But since this is the first time that we meet on the West Coast, there are many who believe that we're going to have very many visitors. The very fact that in and around San Francisco there are spots of beauty to be seen, and I mean God's beautiful creation, is going to work against us somewhat for the convention, for this reason. That if If you was, if the dirt oaks are there felt as other places are felt, we would like to have a large rally Sunday afternoon. The people would not be out sightseeing instead of going to the rally. They realized that. They thought for a while of having a Lutheran hour rally that Sunday. They've abandoned that idea. Then they wanted to know whether they could put on an evening of special entertainment for the delegates and guests. They've got that idea. So we're going to go out there for a convention, for a working convention. And the men at the convention will be busy. I'm going to say to you what I've said to some others. If God gives me the health to preside over the convention, I'll again arrange the program so that in the afternoon we'll have a 15-minute recess. In the morning, no recess. And in order to get the people back after the afternoon recess, I'm going to put a controversial issue on the program right after recess. That brings an end. Sometimes they are glued to their seat. They don't want to leave lest somebody else take their seat. The convention arrangement will be this. They'll have tables. And the districts will be seated together. That's one of the ideas that is developed out there. For a while, we played with the idea of having sectional meetings. For instance, when we thought of discussing the subject of missions, that we would divide up into smaller groups, and then the mission boards would have to present their case to all these sections. Something like the sections we've had at our fiscal conference. But when you think in terms of 1,000 delegates, and you try to divide them up, space isn't there to think of too many divisions. We could think in terms of 5 sections. Now, if that were the case, then there would be 200 people in each section. And again, we came to the conclusion that's too large a section. So we're asking our floor committees to come with well-prepared resolutions to present those to the General Convention for discussion and adoption or rejection. Now, what matters are coming up? You know, of course, that matters of our colleges and seminaries are coming up. There is no doubt that God has so richly blessed our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod with growth that we are suffering today from underproduction of pastors and teachers, candidates. There is a shortage. Our College of Presidents met a week or two ago, and it became apparent again that there are more vacancies than we're going to be able to supply if all these vacancies really call for candidates. Those are theological candidates. And we're thinking of teacher candidates. There especially, folks, our church perhaps never will, though it must strive to, be in a position to train a sufficient number of women teachers. Is it sad? To me it is, that some of our congregations in some places, in order to meet the emergency, and they are emergencies, to meet the either-or, either close the school, or close the schoolroom, or else go out and get someone else to teach, whether they have had any particular training for it or not. Is it sad to you that some have reached out to get teachers in public schools who belong to one of the other Lutheran bodies to come and teach in our parochial schools? Is it still sadder to know that there are congregations who, in their dilemma, reach out merely and ask, are you a Christian? and then invite them to teach in their schools. Now, all of this brings to a focus the fact that we must think in terms of training more pastors and teachers, missionaries. This, of course, is going to mean that we may have to enlarge some of our present facilities. It will mean, and this is coming in the form of a memorial, that we may have to establish another junior college or two. The Michigan district is coming with a very, and supported by the central district and by a large section of the English district, coming with a request that we erect a freshman, sophomore year of a junior college in the Detroit area. Central district supports it. English district men in that area support it. These men today feel definitely we have no school, no junior college to which we can send our men. Either they go to Milwaukee, and Milwaukee is overcrowded, or they have to go the long trek to Dunksville. Perhaps, is it saying too much when we say perhaps, we didn't consider it well enough when we closed the junior college at Fort Wayne. Now, there is an area of the large Missouri Synod population, an area where you could have some very fine recruitment work done. And yet we were told the other day that a congregation sent more men to Balfour than to our school. And other than that, one of the things that's coming. Another clamor comes from the West Coast. The West Coast wants another junior college in the southern part of California. We have one at Oakland. We have one at Portland. What this will mean eventually is that, now of course you're thinking in the future, that we perhaps have a junior college in California, Southern California, a junior college in Portland, and then a seminary in the San Francisco, Oakland area. A parallel seminary to our seminary in St. Louis. Now, these are some of the things which are coming up for consideration, alongside of the fact that we must enlarge some of the the buildings and so on that we have at our present campuses. Then, of course, you'd expect a convention like this to take up the matter of mission. I don't know how you folks feel, but it just hurts my heart to the quick when I think that as late as the St. Paul Convention, we heard the report from our mission board for North and South America that we were establishing at the rate of 120 new mission stations in the United States and Canada per year. And then our convention became so enthusiastic and said to our board, bring that up to 135 per year. And anybody who looks around in the United States, looks around at what's happening in all our larger cities, the suburban and the suburbanian area, will realize very readily there are opportunities. And then when you look to certain sections of our country, such as the East, the Southeast, Florida, Georgia, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and do you know that Phoenix, Arizona is supposed to be one of the fastest growing cities in the United States? And that it is hoped that in the matter of 10 years or so, that would be one of the leading cities. Then again, the West Coast. Anyone who's been out there knows that what some of those folks are doing in the Los Angeles area, they're sending bulldozers into their orchards, orange orchards. Tear up those trees and put in homes, housing projects. Some folks believe, and it's not merely chambers of commerce talk, that the cities of Southern California will be practically one in the course of 10 years from now. Well, look what an opportunity that brings to the church. The district today is not in a position financially to start all the missions which it would like to. And that holds true of some of the other districts that I have mentioned. Florida, Georgia is one of those fast-growing areas. Now, our convention will have to take this into consideration. It hurt me, I said to the Quick the other day, when Pastor Hilmer, the executive secretary of our mission board for North and South America, came in and said, we have been compelled to forget the St. Paul Revolution. Just can't do it. You know that this last year we opened 90 new stations. And from prospect, we're not going to open more in the year 1959. And the opportunities are there. And then when you let your eyes go to South America, or to Africa, to India, to the Orient in general, your heart must bleed when you're going to have to say, the mission board really wants 10 men, but you're not financially in a position to send more than 5. God is opening doors, and we're standing there and says, yes, Lord, we see that the doors are open, but we can't do it. It isn't true that we can't do it. It can be done. Now that brings with it, of course, as the mission project always does, the matter of funds. You folks know, of course, that this last year we were supposed to raise $16 million in Synod. That was a budget which was adopted by the 50 conference. I mean the year 58. And the board of directors rather timidly came to the fiscal conference and said, we want to set the goal at $16 million for the year 1969. The fiscal conference men, and there are 3 representatives from each district, the president and 2 financial men. These men took hold of that proposal of the board of directors and said, we're going to up that at least to 16.5. Well, 16 was the goal for 58. Dr. Herman and his co-workers predicted that we might reach 15.2. We reached 14.7, almost 14.8. Now, it's very evident that the board of directors has to look at that. Not what could we do, but what are we doing, is the question that we have to ask. And we'll have to strike ourselves not a decade. That's the English expression, that cut the cloth. Yeah. The board of directors is up against that. Actually, brethren, the board of directors at its last meeting debated powerfully and seriously whether or not we shouldn't say to our men, cut the more. Our department. We didn't do it. We didn't want to take that drastic step. We want our convention in 59 to have a word to say about that. But at the same time, we decided as a board of directors, and particularly the laymen on the board, that we have tens and tens of thousands of people in our synod who could do far over and above their contributions that they're giving through the regular district channels. And for that reason, you pastors, if you haven't already received it, will receive a letter from me at the request of the board of directors.
asking for the names of such people. He could give $25, $50, $100, $500, $1,000 or more, over and above what they did for their regular contributions to the budget for congregation and district and synod. If they will, if the cross of the Lord Jesus, if the sacrifice which he brought for us touches their hearts, then perhaps also these people will be ready and be willing to bring a real sacrifice. We'd like to bring a favorable report to the coming convention when you get these letters to dine with some of your elders or with some other of your consecrated men and let them help you to find the names that such men. These laymen on the board of directors want to write a person-to-person letter to these people. Well, of course, finances is going to be a big, big question at San Francisco. I pray God that we may not take a retrogressive step, nor that we may merely stand still. For a growing church body, numerically in membership, for a growing church body to stand still is going backwards. And under God and with his blessing, by his inspiration, we ought to move forward. Now I've touched on some of the issues that are coming up at the convention, which may provoke a question here or there. No. The Canadian districts have met, and they have formed what is now known as the Canadian Lutheran Church for these reasons. A Canadian is not an American, and an American is not a Canadian. We Americans are foreigners to the Canadian. There was a time when I used to like to go to Canada because I could get $1.10 for my American dollar. When I go up there now, I get about 95 cents on my dollar. Just in the reverse. But the Canadians generally don't want to be classified as Americans. And that idea is so general that when our church works up there and they speak of themselves as the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, well, that's an American church. That makes no impression on the folks up there. So when they deal with the government, it's like that. And these three districts want to remain districts of our church, but for those reasons, want to approach the government, other agencies, and other organizations together as the Lutheran Church of Canada. We would have to add a considerable number of buildings if that idea were to be carried out. And let's bear in mind, before we advocate anything like that, that the senior college idea has not had its trial, its testing. We don't know how that is going to work out. Let a class of two or three from the senior college go through St. Louis to see how that experiment works. There are those of us who firmly believe that that is a typically good idea. Junior colleges, and then 2 years at Fort Wayne, or wherever the senior college would have been located, and then the theological studies. There are some who have always felt otherwise.
Now, our synod as such decided that's the thing. And that's what we're going to do. And let's try it out fully before we make any changes. That would be my answer to that, Pastor. I wonder whether you have misread that. That article stated, rather, that the number of those who are not studying for the ministry is a nominal one, whereas the number of those that have the ministry in view has not risen too much. There are a few less, not many, but we still have the numbers there. And the thing for which our men are working, of course, is that more and more are being enrolled who actually have the ministry in view. But you reread that article, if you will.
Yes. That was my point. Whether we could encourage them that our young people are going to our junior college, that we on the college level will encourage them more and more to study the studies and those who are applicants to study the ministry.
Decidedly. You mean that they have had their training before at some other school? Yes. And then go to our senior college? Now, if you'll go back in figures, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, you'll be surprised how the number of non-theological students has decreased and the number of theological students has risen. That is something, of course, which isn't done overnight, but what you said there of encouraging is certainly in place. Did you tell him also how much it would cost? I happen to have seen that figure asking for $2 million. A Bible Institute to be established on a separate campus. I personally am convinced that the Missouri Synod for years has needed an institute of that type to train lay workers, not the type of men who then want to get into the pulpit, but the type of men who do good work in a congregation or in a district without being preachers in a pulpit. That's what you have reference to, isn't it? A good deal of fun has been made about the Fort Wayne Lake, hasn't it? Do you know that that's one of the least expensive things about that school? All they did is filled it up with some dirt, a drawer there, filled it up with some dirt, and the Lord supplied the water. In a joking way, I've said that there's one spot there which I pick out as the spot forever for the president of Senate, whoever he happens to be, to sit down and fish. That lake is beautiful, but it didn't cost us much. The Board for Higher Education of our church, which consists of some fine lay people and some fine preachers and so on, has given that same consideration for many, many years. I wish that you would hear some of the speeches made by representatives of the colleges about that. And I wish you'd hear the discussions in the Board for Higher Education. The idea has been expressed that we would do well to receive only high school graduates at our schools. In other words, we don't worry about their high school training. But on the other hand, arises the question not only about what about their languages, but what about their religion? What about their training for the study of theology? You know that, of course, at the ordinary high school, they do not get religion. At our Lutheran high schools, they do get religion. Now, hold on to your seats when I say this. Our Lutheran high schools do not have too good a record as a place of recruitment for theological and teacher training students. Why not, is the question we're asking. They should have. That should be a real garden from which we pluck the plants to grow into trees, but they're not. The percentage is too low. Oh, there are some very fine ones, but not enough. What experiment? They can't overcome that lake, but that's all right. Of the Fort Wayne High School. Yeah, I get what you mean. And they figured on drawing a good many of the Fort Wayne, of the graduates of the Fort Wayne Lutheran High School. Not our high school as a synod, but see, the Fort Wayne people have that high school. And the final results do not show up too well. And then as far as the 2 years from others who came from other places, well, that of course ended with the sale of the Concordia Junior College. Oh, yes. The Lutheran Synod Missouri, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Foundation is an idea developed by men who once served on the board of directors, who serve on some district boards of directors, and men who are at present on our board of directors. We do have some wealthy people in Synod. Now let's not kid ourselves. We have some wealthy people in Nebraska, in Iowa, in all our districts. And when I mean wealth, I don't mean merely that they have sufficient to get along well here, to build a nice home and like that. But they have money that they invest elsewhere. And some of those men are asking, where can we invest our funds so that they will serve the kingdom? other church bodies have gone to the idea of a foundation. If, for instance, a wealthy man, and I mean a man who has more than, say, $100,000-$250,000, which he would leave in his will, if he makes no provision except his will, donating that to his children or to some charity, then the people who inherit will find that Uncle Sam reaches in there pretty deeply for an inheritance tax. If, however, and that's strictly legal, Uncle Sam says go ahead, you establish a foundation and through that foundation designate funds for this and that purpose, there are no taxes to be paid. Now, our men believe that there are many men in our synod who would gladly place their funds into that kind of a foundation. I don't mean all their riches, but goodly amounts into such a foundation, and in that way would also be perfectly free with reference to the matter of income tax payment, the matter of inheritance tax payment, and yet they would know that their money is invested and will be invested for good purposes. May I give you an example? In Oklahoma, we have a man who was married, died at the age of 86. Another man had no descendant, no one to who could inherit, except an old maid sister who is 80, and a brother who was along about 84, 85 at that time. I heard about these and was asked to come down there and speak to those people. Not to coerce them into anything, nor even the foundation, because the foundation was just in the making. And when I made my second trip, the first trip down there, they were rather interested. This one of them, a doctor, now 87 years old, had married a Methodist and went to the Methodist church, but he himself never switched over to Methodist membership. When I made a second trip down there at the time when I was at the election at Winfield, and this good doctor, was on his deathbed in the hospital, and his sister was in the room waiting on him from 7 in the morning until 9 in the evening, and then, of course, nurses took over. He was in a semi-coma, and of course I couldn't talk finances to him. His pastor, that is the man who buried him, his pastor and I then spoke to him briefly, very briefly, because he would have to be aroused on his spiritual state, on his death. It was evident the Lord was going to take him. And he was very, very grateful. But his sister sat there with me, 80 years old, and I spoke to her very freely, and I said, "Hat ihr Bruder ein Testament gemacht?" "Ja." "Hat auch die Kirche bedacht?" Now, he had no children. There are no children except the old doctor. His wife died 7 years ago, and then this other man who died also a few years ago. Now the old maid is all alone. And I said, "Hat ihr Bruder ein Testament gemacht?" "Ja." "Hat die Kirche bedacht?" "Nein, glaube nicht." And the truth of the matter is that she is the sole heir. They have some nieces or nephews in Germany. But of course, you know what that means. You can't get millions into Germany. Uncle Sam doesn't look favorably upon something like that. So I said to this good old maid and said, ja, das wird aber viel Einkommen, nicht Einkommensteuer, that's inheritance. Erbschaftssteuer. Das wird Ihnen viel Erbschaftssteuer kosten. Onkel Sam wird da ziemlich tief hineingreifen. Ja, ich weiß, sie antwortet, ich weiß. See, she had the experience with her first brother. She was made heir, and she paid heavy Erbschaftssteuer. Now, the estate, some think, runs into the millions. $3-4 million. The doctor invested in oil. The other brother bought farms. And the old maid also bought farms. Now, what can be done? What could be done for that good lady? When she dies, look what Uncle Sam is going to get. To her, I'm going to give the solid advice one of these days when I've gotten in her head, into her good graces. I told her, I don't want any personal. But I told her, we've now started a foundation for our church. And that may help you to solve your problem. And one of these days, I'm going to go talk to her about that. Perhaps in memory of her brother, this one or that one, she will say, I'm going to set aside $250,000 for a building at one of our colleges or seminaries. Wouldn't that be fine? And then she wouldn't have to pay any Erbschaftssteuer nor anyone else after her. So Dr. Bertermann has accepted the executive secretaryship of this. Brethren, Synod has as yet not passed this. The board of directors has taken that action. The board of directors is going to present it for approval to our convention. And we believe that Synod will not say no. And if Synod disapproves, well, the thing will dissolve. If Synod would want to take unfavorable action, we might have to take the position which once Dr. Jake Miller took. Dr. Jake Miller was very much interested in that farm which our colleague owned at Fort Wayne. And that board took independent action. And he stood before the convention and he said, Dies mein Buckel, Schlag Frau. Now, does that answer your question sufficiently, the Reference Foundation?
Is there anyone else who wants to
Yes, ask Dr. Benton? Yes, that's a lot of money. I should have said that too. It was brought to last year's fiscal conference, and the fiscal conference unanimously voted to go ahead with that. But the fiscal conference is not synod.
Pastor Ehrman?
I don't know. No. Pastor Niemöller is quite a prominent position in Aikid. Auslandsbotschafter, the Aikid. But I don't know anything about his imprisonment.
Is anyone else who is before?
You know, of course, that Bishop Orba of, what is it, Hungary? Who was at the Lutheran World Federation. He has been deprived of his bishopric. We don't know how he's faring.
If no one else who wishes the floor, we certainly want to thank Dr. Benton for his wonderful presentation today and for all of his information and also the encouragement that we received from him this morning in his confessional address and also the other material presented this morning, especially during the Lord's Supper. Now, we have until 4 o'clock, and and wondering whether if you do want to reach that, if you want to hear the rest of the material that Mr. Kramer has to offer us. I want to show you of a controversial nature, so you want to be very clinical for it. Would you want a recess, or could we continue until 4 o'clock so we serve the complete material? We probably have enough plays of it to show 4. Would that have a recess? No? We will call on Mr. Kramer then to present his material, and then Dr. Bacon is going to close the conference or the retreat with the devotion. Dr. Bacon?
Well, I may, but you come on up, Mr. Kramer. Well, there's the timer. I'll make the announcement.